I got the impression that my arousal was something to be ashamed about. So until I learned how to hold space for her, the one that has that thought, and to step her through what she would have needed in that moment back then, until I learned to do that, you know, her thoughts and feelings and beliefs were in play all the time for me. So even the first step was just becoming aware that that's a separate voice, that I am not that voice. I am not the girl who gets ashamed. Like, the larger integrated adult me is not the girl that is frozen in time in that moment, who created that moment of arousal equals shame. And so the more, so kink as medicine, or really any of these techniques that we use, because there are so many ways to heal, but it's really about holding space for the self, and or even moving into celebration of that thing that you feel ashamed about, or that false belief that's coming up.
Welcome to Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators with Jordan Donnell. This is a safe place to learn about women's health and sexual wellness. I'm your host, Jordan Donnell, physician assistant, women's sexual health educator, and intimacy coach.
Welcome back to the Vaginas, Vulvas, and Vibrators podcast. Today, I have a special guest joining me, Sharon. I recently met Sharon in San Diego at a networking event, and we were talking about medicine and kind of ran into the topic of kink as medicine. And this is an area that you've explored in your own journey, as well as something that you help other people with.
It's true.
So before we kind of jump into how kink is a form of medicine, I want you to give us a little intro on yourself.
Yeah. Maybe I'll start with that conversation we were having just before you pressed record, which was, I also tried the route of trying wine, you know, as I was moving into some of the more alternative lifestyles communities. I remember specifically being in the swinging community, and I knew that I really wanted to be participating in those communities. I wanted to play. I wanted to have multiple people playing with me all at once. But there was something happening in my body that was blocking me from getting the mental, you know, the mental was in and my body was not. And so I did try drinking wine and stuff to kind of loosen up and sort of, you know, ease more into my yes on those nights. And what I thought would happen was, once I had experienced the pleasure of my own yes and getting what I wanted, I thought that I would be able to pull that memory up when I was sober and then just be a yes after that. And what I experienced was not that. I experienced that it just kept setting back to zero the next morning, setting back to zero. And so I realized that the only way forward, if I really wanted change for myself, was for me to actually hold space for the fears and insecurities or whatever it was that was coming up that was blocking my body from being a yes.
So it's interesting because I've gone to some of the sex clubs locally, and something that I've thought about every time I go is that it's so centered around alcohol. And alcohol is such an interesting thing, and that it reduces your inhibitions. There's some advantages in that space, right? But then it has me wondering, like, are a lot of people going there and using alcohol to maybe avoid, and they're not really being present for their experiences? I'm not trying to generalize. I guess I'm really saying about like my own, when I drink alcohol and then go have an experience, am I really present? Am I really honoring myself and my boundaries and what I want? And so it's interesting how so many of those spaces are centered around alcohol, which actually has an impact on our desire and arousal.
Right. And I want to bring up that what you brought up is probably more common for most people, which is that the alcohol might interfere with their no.
Yes.
For me, it was the opposite. It's like I wanted to be the yes. I wasn't worried about my no. I experienced so much shame in my arousal, which stems back to childhood experience of childhood sexual abuse and molestation and incest, which was that the things that happened to me at 5 and 6, different people and, you know, different lengths of time that they had these experiences. But what they both groomed in me was a feeling of shame over my own arousal, because most of the experiences that I had at 5 and 6 were pleasurable to my 5 and 6 year old body, with an exception here or there. And it was really confusing to me because there was no one to guide me through the emotions and the things that were coming up, the arousal itself and understanding arousal. And so it became a link that wasn't serving me as an adult, which was that when I got aroused, the shame would come in and shut my body down. And so, you know, I was being groomed at the time to keep it a secret. And so that was where the shame got developed. So as I became more aware of the things that were blocking me from my yes and really being in my pleasure, I wasn't sure how to tackle it. And so, you know, the alcohol was an attempt. And ultimately, what I had to tackle was the shame. And so I started going to swinging and doing these and going to tantra parties and stuff too, to practice my yes instead of practicing my no, and to not feel shame in my desire. And it still took a decade or more, you know, because again, there was no one like us in the communities helping to guide us or to have us ask ourselves the right questions or to present us with these healing modalities that can help us move through this stuff. And, you know, I know we're going to talk about kink as medicine, and it's one of those ways to do this.
So how did you get to kink being a form of medicine for you?
Yeah. I would say that my kink journey started years ago. It was probably, I want to say maybe 14 years ago, maybe 13 years ago, something like that. I was at a party and a person there was well known as a flogger and a rope. And it was my first experience. He offered me an experience with flogging, and I had, you know, he basically flogged my back and like the back of my legs and my butt. And I remember the experience being super erotic because I was kind of in front of everybody, which was really hard. I'm not an exhibitionist, and I have reasons to feel really nervous around being the center of attention. But there was this erotic charge from being the center of attention. There was another erotic charge from being almost like restrained, like being asked to stay still in one place. And here I'm going to hit you with something and you're going to stay still. And there's something kind of hot about like sort of the instruction. And what I realized was between that experience and then later an experience with the same dominant and the same top, I had this great experience with the flogging. It felt like a massage. I was really intrigued by my own body responses, both to the feeling of mental restraint, as well as the actual physical sensation. It turns out that I am a masochist and that my brain interprets the sensation of things like flogging strikes as pleasure. And I got to discover that first night. And then as this dominant and I became really good friends, and we would both like wake up at 4 a.m. So we would talk with each other and we got to know each other really well. And eventually he invited me to be in submission to him one night. And I took him up on that. And at that time, my capacity for orgasm was a single orgasm. It took a lot of work to get there. It was only a clitoral orgasm. And when I was done, I was done. I was exhausted and done. So in the experience of him setting up the expectation and kind of giving me instruction, because we had talked about how the instruction was kind of hot. So as he gave me the instructions for how I would be in service to him in the next, for the evening, you know, he let me know that if I felt like I might climax, that I needed to ask his consent first. And of course, my first thought was, really, dude? Really? So like, I'm like, whatever, you know, whatever with your power trip thing. Plus, I knew that, you know, it's going to be really rare to none for me to orgasm anyway. So I was like, whatever. So we start our play together, though. And throughout the course of me being in service and submission to him that evening, I wanted to climax, but was too afraid to ask because the shame had come up. So I didn't ask. And I just like let it pass by. And then I wanted to climax again. And I did ask. I got the bravery enough up to ask. And he told me no.
So, oh my goodness.
Super hot. I had no idea how even like him telling me no, how hot that would be for me. But what I realized at the end of that experience was he was giving me permission to have pleasure in the ways that I wasn't allowing myself to have pleasure. And so by being, quote, forced by him, I was able to say yes to myself, but not have to take responsibility for the yes. And it was a really freeing and liberating experience. And what it taught me was that it was my mind that was the obstacle. That's it. It was only my mind that was the obstacle to my pleasure, to my what then unlocked eventually in multiple orgasms and other kinds of orgasm.
Wow. And I think that's such a, like, hey, thank you for sharing that story. That's a juicy ass story. And I'm over here thinking about all of my own shit that's very similar and denied orgasm and things like that, where like, it's so powerful. It can be, right?
Yeah.
Maybe not for everybody, but can be very powerful and very stimulating. And I love that you brought up that it's in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much that happens in our brain and so much that we can't really control, but can control in other ways.
You can eventually. I get it. I get that people think that they can't control their thoughts and feelings, but the truth is you can, but it does take time.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of holding space for these versions of ourselves that are trying to protect us. Like, as an example, like in my childhood with the childhood sexual abuse and incest, you know, I got the impression that my arousal was something to be ashamed about. So until I learned how to hold space for her, the one that has that thought, and to step her through what she would have needed in that moment back then, until I learned to do that, you know, her thoughts and feelings and beliefs were in play all the time for me. So even the first step was just becoming aware that that's a separate voice, that I am not that voice. I am not the girl who gets ashamed. Like, the larger integrated adult me is not the girl that is frozen in time in that moment, who created that moment of arousal equals shame. And so the more, so kink as medicine, or really any of these techniques that we use, because there are so many ways to heal, but it's really about holding space for the self and, or even moving into celebration of that thing that you feel ashamed about, or that false belief that's coming up. So, you know, to be the most powerful healings to me are the ones where we are actually presenting our fears really transparently to ourselves and to the people that are in the space to hold it with us, and then to be seen and held in that false belief all the way through the moment, until the moment is resolved, until that echo of the self who has been trying to protect you this whole time gets witnessed and then gets delivery of everything she ever needed. And then that thought goes away. And this speaks to my healing modality. We haven't really talked about like who I am really, but I used to be a writer of comic books and video games and film and novels. And I took a hiatus from that to do my own healing journey. And I spent some time not having to work and having a safe space to live in. And I was able to work through a lot of the childhood traumas. And of course, the work kind of never really fully ends, but I was able to do a lot of that work. And in the process of that, and a divorce, and losing everything business-wise and everything too, there was a spiritual awakening experience that happened. And in that experience, I decided to pivot what I was doing from being a writer to becoming a healer. And in learning the process of my own healing and how I could literally dissolve and release the echoes of the trauma from my body, I now can usher other people's healings in a similar way. I can hold a safe energetic container and shamanically guide them through the releasing of their own trauma. And I explain it through frequency. Like, we know now Bessel van der Kolk's book, The Body Keeps the Score. So
that's a good book.
Yeah. So we know, right, how the body retains memory. And the way that I explain that, it is held through, let's say, a denser or slower frequency. And what I do in my blended healing modality, which I call guided epigenetic release, is that it releases those denser frequencies from the cellular memory so that you just don't have that thought anymore. Like, once that person, that echo of the old wound has been fully witnessed and given everything they needed, and they literally, their storyline is resolved. I use it writer's terms a lot, but that storyline is resolved. The frequency literally is lifted out of the energetic body. And it might, your brain might engage a few more times on that old thought, but when it no longer has the actual frequency to reach to in the cellular memory, the brain will stop engaging as well. And you literally will no longer have the thought of, I should feel shame. I'm not enough. You know, why is daddy's attention being drawn somewhere else? Like, you literally just won't have the thoughts anymore.
Wow. So what you don't know about me is my background is actually in genetics.
Hey,
so excited. My undergrad is in genetics. And so epigenetics, I want to touch about like what that even is. I happen to be watching a show recently, We Are What We Eat on Netflix. I don't know if you've seen it.
I have, years ago.
They have a new one with a twin study. Highly recommend.
I saw that advertised. Cool.
But they were talking about epigenetics, which was a good refresher of what it is. But basically, we can have the same genes as a twin in this particular case, but the way it's expressed can be different based on the experiences or the exposures. And so essentially, that's what epigenetics is the expression of a particular gene.
Mm-hmm.
Would you agree?
Yes.
In the most layman's terms possible.
The knowledge that we can turn them on and turn them off. And that just because we have the proclivity for something doesn't mean we will actually express it that way.
Yeah. So it's so fascinating that you are able to do that. How the hell do you even do that? Like, how do you do that? Train that?
Yeah. It was something that sort of developed out of like coaching initially and really just asking questions and helping people with asking themselves different questions and mindset shifts. But then I had the actual spiritual awakening and there was an actual like supernatural unlock that occurred to me. And I had to start believing in myself in a different way. And what started to happen was I started to pull oracle cards for every client before our coaching session. And then there might be, I noticed that. And then there might be, you know, I would get an intuitive hit on something they were telling me. I would get some imagery or a knowing. And I started getting courageous enough to say, hey, I think I got an intuitive hit here. Do you mind if I share it with you? And I started to play with, and I kept getting a yes. That's exactly what I saw, or I really relate to that, or that resonates with me. And that made me braver. And I started sharing more. And then it became a more of a collaborative storytelling experience. And I shifted from healing to, or from coaching to healing, and realized and that people's lives were being changed by what felt like just conversations, or almost like collaborative storytelling, LARPing. And it felt like, And then their lives would be totally different. Like a week later, they'll be like, you know, I just didn't even have that thought. This is the hard part to explain in the result of the healing sessions, because it will result in you noticing, like for me, noticing I got home from the mall and I never even looked behind my shoulder to make sure no one was following me before I got to my car, which was a really common thing that I would have done in a period of my life. And I had done some healing around that time. And suddenly got home and was like, oh my God, that was so reckless of me. I didn't really feel that way. Like that was like the story I was telling myself, that I should feel reckless because I didn't look. But what I really felt was like, there just wasn't anything to be worried about. Mm-hmm. And I could feel that, like in my body felt the truth of that. Like I don't even have anything to be worried about.
Wow. That's so fascinating. So kind of going like back to kink, how do you use your methodology in the space of kink? Because you do, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah, we can. I have someone that I know who, so many stories I could share. There are lots of ways to use kink as medicine. You could recreate a moment from the past that made them feel super empowered and they want to recreate the feeling of empowerment. That's one way. Another way would to be recreate a moment of the past where they felt disempowered. And so they can create a moment of empowerment. You can use kink as medicine to turn off the brain, because we're so trained to be in our minds all the time, and in our ego minds, even worse, that kink, especially like sensation play, it doesn't have to be intense sensation play, but even just, you know, sensation play can take you from the mind back into the body and give you some relief. Did you want to say something?
Yes. What? So it's so funny that you bring this up, because I actually have a workshop in April in San Diego all about like an intro to sensation play.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just ironic timing that you mentioned that.
Perfect timing. Not ironic at all.
Yeah.
Not coincidental at all.
It's not. But sensation play is such a great way to become present and paying attention to what's physically happening.
And that is what happens in the healing room. I can say something like, and with kink too, let me get back to kink actually and then come back to that. But another thing kink can do, let me give you an example. I had a client who had an experience of it as a child, a traumatic experience of almost drowning in a swimming class, like learning to swim. And the class was being taught by two gentlemen. And in trying to teach her how to kick and propel herself under the water, each one of them took one of her arms and they pulled her under the water so she could kick. And what happened, though, is she panicked because she felt like she couldn't be let up. And they actually didn't kind of let her up right away. And so she felt this feeling of panic, like she was going to die under the water. And so she had this fear of water and fear of drowning ever since she was like 5 or 6. So we created a scene. This was actually in the context of a kink scene. Myself and other well-skilled tops and dominants that we curated with her, that we were going to do a waterboarding scene for her in order for her. It was her idea that she wanted to confront these feelings, this fear of drowning, by creating a waterboarding scene. But so we practiced super big safety around the scene. So like I was going to be one of the, I wasn't in the lead, but I was assisting. We practiced because she was going to be wearing a double hood. She wouldn't be able to speak, plus the water. So if you don't know what waterboarding is, it's like essentially like trickling water into like a mask and you feel like you're drowning. And it's an old terrorist like torture technique. So she specifically asked for this. You know, we as the monitors of the scene, we had her test her body responses when she was going to be in stress, because we needed to be able to see what does stress look like and what does red, I need help, stop the scene right now look like. So we practiced what that would look like. So there was a lot of like safety preparation, over preparation on stuff like this, because, you know, we all have the best or her best interests in mind. And then we executed the scene. And when the scene was done, and she did give a foot stomp that was the stop. And when she stopped, you know, pulled the masks off, and she was just a changed person. She had this blush in her face. Her eyes were alight. Of course, I'm sure there was like plenty of endorphins and neurotransmitters in play. But when I checked back in with her after the scene, it was more than just the high of the scene and the brain chemicals. She felt like not only had she faced her own death and conquered it and felt empowered by it, but it allowed her to tackle other things in her life that she just felt like, I can tackle anything. If I can tackle that and face that the death of that, I can tackle anything. And in fact, like she went on to snorkel and stuff for when she got married, and she had a honeymoon in Hawaii. And, you know, those would have been things that she would have never been able to ask for herself if she hadn't been willing, you know, to recognize this thing in play, and then to be willing to hold space for the one who was so afraid of experiencing that again.
Wow, that's so, so fascinating. And I love that we're talking about kink. And so often when you hear kink, and probably a handful of the listeners, when they hear this, they're going to agree, you think of spanking, you mm-hmm. think of flogging, you think of restraints, you think of
a caricatured or cartoon version.
Yeah.
Yeah. Whips.
But kink is so much more mm-hmm. than that. And there is so much more in the sense of like communication and safety mm-hmm. and having like hard conversations.
Mm-hmm. Being transparent about your desires without
yes.
shame. And then being welcomed and like, yes, let us do that pleasurable thing for you.
Yeah.
Are you ready to start understanding yourself better, learning and recognizing your patterns, and really develop a relationship with yourself? If this sounds like you, the Unleashing My Power, a Women's Empowerment and Gratitude Journal is for you. This journal was specifically curated for women just like you to help you take back your power and develop and go to the next level in life. My friend Danielle and I created this journal because of our own experiences and what we were looking for in a daily practice to improve our connection to self and really become connected with ourselves. This is game-changing, and the feedback that we are getting from other women who have started using this journal is absolutely amazing. You can find it on Amazon, or you can go to jordandanelle.com/journal, and it'll take you right there. I hope you enjoy. Be sure to go snag yours right away and leave me a review. Tell us what you think about it. Slide in the DMs. I know that your life will change when you start using this journal.
And sometimes it involves pleasure, mm-hmm. but it doesn't necessarily always involve pleasure either.
You're right. Although I would also argue that some of the things that you think of as not pleasure are pleasurable to the person asking for it.
Yes.
You see what I mean? When I first entered the kink community, I was identifying pretty heavily as a submissive. And I would say that I don't identify as a submissive anymore, but I still like submissive space, and I choose it, but it's not coming from need anymore. Like, so when we have like a wound, like I had daddy wounds. And so my drive to be a submissive or to be in submission to someone was in order to feel fully seen, for that person to be like, you are mine tonight. I'm going to own you tonight. So I feel owned. I feel prioritized and special. I feel loved. That I would kneel at their feet and put my head in their lap, and they would put their hand on my head. It was like, it was far less sexual than people might think. What I was being healed from was the 100% presence and attention to me. That made me feel like I mattered, that I was desired, and that they were prioritizing me for this length of time, collaring, like all super, like super sacred and super powerful moments of presence. Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, yes, I have a masochist, and yes, I played in other ways with dominance that had to do with sensation and striking and things like that. But like the healing power of kneeling and having them say, "You're mine tonight," or having them put their hand on my head and make me feel safe and seen and like I mattered was the healing.
Yeah. I think that was the word I was looking for earlier, is that kink is not all sexual.
Mm-hmm.
And so often in spaces that maybe are not super familiar with kink, that's the assumption about it.
Sure.
But most cases of kink I have found are few and far between are actually sexual.
Yeah, I would agree with you. Here's another one. I was friends with a professional dominant, and she had a client who came to her because, and what he wanted was for her to put on the big stiletto heels and to move to the opposite side of the room that he was in and to like wind up and charge at him, racing, running at him, and then to, as hard as she could, kick him in the balls with her high heels. And I knew this was fascinating to me at the time. My friend was telling me, and I'm like, why in the world would someone pay you to do that? Like, is it a masochist thing? And she's like, it wasn't. She's like, he had an experience of being mugged, and he was in an alley, and two men and a woman cornered him and said, you know, give us your wallet or give us everything you own, whatever. And the two men had both held him by like the arms and spread his legs out. And they basically told her, like, kick him in the balls, kick him in the balls. And, you know, she's like, okay, kind of flustered, but she like gears up and she kicked him in the balls. And what you think would happen is that he would crumple to the ground. They would run with his wallet. You know, that's what you would think would happen, but something else happened. So she kicked him in the balls. And instead of the pain and the crumpling, he felt this surge of empowered energy run through his body. Mm-hmm. And he essentially kicked the two guys' asses like a Bourne Identity scene, you know, where he suddenly remembers he's like a super spy or something. He kicks the guy's asses and then tells the woman, you better run, you know, and she ran. And so like he wanted to recreate this moment of empowerment.
Ooh.
Right? Nothing to do with sex. Yeah, he liked high heels, whatever. Nothing to do with sex.
Yeah, I love that. I love that we are like busting myths about what is actually happening and how kink can be so powerful for a variety of different reasons.
Yeah. And I think, of course, the backgrounds of why this feels so challenging to people is because of how we just give no gentle or supportive education around sexuality or eroticism or our arousal. And just the long-term projected prudishness around sex keeps us. That's why people think of kink as a caricature or as a cartoon, because we're just not offering them any thoughts beyond that. It's like, don't talk about sex at all, or sex is, you know, chains and whips, or kink is chains and whips. And, you know, obviously there's just so much breath in between those two thoughts.
So much. Yeah. So something else you talk about is conscious kink.
Mm-hmm.
And I am curious, and I think this is going to fall in line with exactly what we're talking about, but like, how is conscious kink different from, quote, maybe like traditional kink, whatever
sure.
that would be?
Or just
like.
Not conscious kink.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unconscious. Yeah. So I was burst at behaving unconsciously when I first got into the kink. Mm-hmm. When I did that first scene with that dominant where I was in submission to him, I wasn't conscious. I didn't have my spiritual awakening. I didn't know that the result of that night would be so powerful, such a powerful shift for me. So it was only in reflecting on being fascinated by my body's and mind's response to the evening, and then reflecting on that later, that, you know, I was kind of retroactively conscious about what was happening. So for me, conscious kink is that you do ask yourself the why. Like, okay, I am identified as a submissive. I want this. And everybody's submission looks different. You want something very specific. Why? Why do you want those things? And I think that you don't always have the perfect answer. Like, you can't always come up with the answer as to why that fetish or something is something that interests you. But a lot of times you can, and there'll be threads. And that the asking of the why itself is very powerful. And then the finding of the answer can be very powerful because, again, of this continued way that we ask people to feel ashamed about their sexual desires or their erotic desires. And so when you know where the origin is, it often like feels validating, and you're like, well, of course I like that thing. now that I understand it. Mm-hmm. And it's a way for me, because I'm often coming through the lens of shame. It's, I just don't know a way to strip away the shame that society wants to, you know, what they want us to feel that way about it.
And I think that's where like working with somebody is so helpful, because you have somebody who can ask you those questions and who can probe a little bit deeper to help you think about like, where is this stemming from and how to go about maybe fulfilling that. Because if you don't know, you just don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. It's such a creative brainstorming thing to do. And I want to say, be clear, asking yourself the why and not getting an answer is totally fine. Like, you don't have to know where it came from. If you can say, maybe it doesn't matter where it came from. Can I love myself for wanting it? Can I love myself because I want this rather than in spite of wanting it? Like, how much love and compassion and yes can I bring to myself? So conscious kink, it's about taking the things that we consider to be taboo or the things that are on the edge of our comfort zone and turning that edge into something exciting and juicy and something to move toward instead of something to be guarding yourself from. Like, that's the shift from unconscious to conscious. Like, really opening and surrendering to the beauty of your desire rather than giving yourself any layer of judgment around what you want.
I love that. I've talked about conscious sex on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when we bring a level of consciousness, a level of intentionality mm-hmm. to what we are doing, it's so much more powerful.
Yeah.
Like, we can just have sex. We can.
What you're describing is what makes it medicine.
Mm.
You can get the medicine anyway, right? It can happen by happenstance unconsciously, which it did for me. But if you're consciously doing it, that's the crossover to when it becomes medicine, because you're intentionally surrendering to the healing that is possible in the resolving of that denser frequency. So that's my crossover.
I love that. Do you find, and this might be a little bit of a stretch, but like, when we think of kink as medicine, we're talking about healing a lot of traumas, experiences. Mm-hmm. How does that actually impact your physical health?
It can, because again, body keeps the score in how we know. And we know from metaphysical anatomy too, that, you know, certain organs, certain places in the body, when you're having a particular problem in a place in the body, it actually gives you a clue as to what the emotional component is that is involved in the expression of that in your body. So I don't know if you've talked about this, but when we talk about disease, it's actually dis-ease of the body. So if a cold constantly goes to pneumonia with you, you probably are super emotionally sensitive and probably have, you know, experiences, emotionally overwhelming experiences in your early childhood where it wasn't okay to have all those feelings. And people told you that those feelings were too much. And so you have a proclivity to get trouble here because this is where you were told to resist. And by the resisting, it builds the dis-ease in the body. If you constantly have, you know, woman problems or womb problems, you know, it probably has to do with your sense of safety and security in your early childhood that was challenged all the time. Anger is often expressed in a certain way in the body. If your throat closes down because you were trained that it wasn't safe to have a voice, people will have throat problems a lot. So, So by allowing those expressions of the metaphysical to, and then recognizing them in the body and holding space for them, it's not just like inner child work, it's also the somatic work. By just being present with, like, say, the lump that's coming up in the throat, that lump is a representation of the echo of that trauma. So you have to think of it like a little kid who's coming to you. In that moment, again, in that moment in time, they fragmented from you and they gave themselves one job. They freeze your throat up because they are desperately trying to protect you from feeling a moment of past pain again. So in the moment that it was created, where this expression in the throat was created, that early version of you was feeling overwhelmed. And that the pain of that moment was so bad that it put in this protection in place. So it stops you from speaking in order to prevent you from feeling the pain of the moment when you spoke and something bad happened. So when you hold space for that and that clears out of the body changes. Like, you do, you feel more vibrant and healthier. Your immune system improves because of just the nature of what dis-ease is. And that emotions are energy in motion, emotions. once you understand that there's a link and you don't question it, you will see an improvement in your health, an improvement in your immune system. I have a lot of clients right now who are have hip problems, and that's because their hips are afraid to move forward. That's the emotion, afraid to move forward. And once we address, in a healing session, we can go into the physical body first and like my hips are hurting me. Okay, well, let's move into the hips. It does afraid to move forward resonate. And then they can start talking about the fear of moving forward. And then we can resolve the somatic expression, and then the hip won't hurt anymore at the end of the session.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so wild. What's crazy to me is I've been working with a doctor recently. Mm-hmm. His parents are both acupuncturists, and they actually pushed him into Western medicine. Mm-hmm. And now he's going back to learn acupuncture, mm-hmm. more Chinese medicine. But he recently said dis-ease, and it never really dawned on me until you just said it now, mm-hmm. that disease is dis-ease.
Yes, dis-ease of the body.
Mm.
Yeah. Because we are meant to feel all of our emotions, and we're meant to not have them stop us. Like, anger is not supposed to feel worse than joy. They're just two frequencies to feel. But when we resist a frequency, that's when it gets trapped in the body. It's almost like if you think about of the contraction itself, where you felt that and then you had the contraction is where you've now trapped an echo in your body.
Have you heard of the ACE study?
I believe I know what you're talking about. Okay. It's the graded on life experiences.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Adverse childhood events,
yes.
study that was done at, I believe it was Kaiser.
Mm.
Don't quote me on that. Mm-hmm. Google it for the listeners. But this same doctor and I were talking about how childhood impacts, they have a high score on that, very commonly seen with, say, rheumatoid arthritis.
Right.
Or
mm-hmm. Especially talking, these autoimmune disorders.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
And so I think this is where like the kink as medicine mm-hmm. can kind of overlap, and that if we're able to re-empower ourselves or heal whatever that is that needs to be healed through kink, you are able to release that from your body
mm-hmm.
and maybe reduce your risk of some of these diseases.
Yes, I absolutely believe that to be true. Like, I'm aware of, you know, my genetics in such a way that I know, you know, to watch for things like addiction or cancers, you know, in certain places in the body. But in any way, any longer believe that that is my future. I used to be heavier. Most of my life, I was heavier. And I'm not anymore. And people ask me, like, how did you lose the weight? And my answer is, I healed my traumas.
Mm.
Because yeah. my body was holding on to all sorts of memories. And I didn't even know to address them. I didn't even know that there was a way to hold space for the thoughts, like the looping thoughts I had about myself and the shame that would come up. And I didn't even know that I could even ask myself these questions or that there was a place to go. I just thought, this is how life feels.
Wow. All of this is so powerful
mm-hmm.
and can be so useful. And I think that's really why I started this podcast, is to help people learn all of these different things out there. Because if you're not exposed to
mm-hmm.
what it is or how something can help you, or even that it exists.
Yes, absolutely. Plant the
or
seed.
How, mm-hmm. Like this is the seed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. To help you maybe go down a little bit of rabbit hole and see how some of these different methodologies or how different things could just help you live a more pleasurable life in and out of the bedroom.
I feel like it's important for me to bring up as we talk about this. Also, to know what it's like to not go consciously into kink. And when people don't go consciously into kink and all they know is they want this thing, it can often, and especially when it feels like an unlock when they've experienced it for the first time and this rush of energy and excitement comes in, it's almost like new relationship energy. They can get in what we call a frenzy. When you're in frenzy because it feels so good and all you want is to, it's like you got your first hit of cocaine and you just want to feel what that feels like again. And so you're chasing it and you become frenzied in the kink community. It can happen, especially when you're not coming in consciously. And inevitably, that's the most dangerous of the times, because you can connect with people who don't have your best interests in mind, or you don't even know what your own triggers are. And you can get triggered in a scene. And now your top doesn't even, or your bottom, whoever you're dealing with, but like, they don't know your triggers. You didn't know your trigger. And what'll happen is something dramatic could happen. And what often happens is they blame the other person for that. And again, if you're doing conscious kink, there's a clear negotiation of, I understand myself enough to know these are the things I'm looking to clear. And I'd like you to participate with me in that consciously and transparently. And I know that it's possible that my trigger or one of your triggers might come up in the scene. And we want to know, we want to be able to talk about what we might do should that happen and not blame each other for a moment that happens. Or maybe I sit back and I become dissociated and maybe something that was a boundary feels like it was violated. Well, that doesn't mean that that person violated my boundary, but it does mean I was aware that I became frozen and then I wasn't able to speak up. And so like taking responsibility for your experience to me is part of conscious kink and really knowing that we can't put the onus on other people to know us so well or to be responsible for our healing. Like it's often an easy thing to slip into between dominants and submissives that, you know, that the submissive like looks to the dominant for everything. And like the dominant's not a perfect human. And like, you know, they might mess up one time or you might feel abandoned one time, but that doesn't mean they abandoned you. But what's usually happening is your submissive is actually a version of a little girl. And it's the little girl's mind that's having that conversation. It's the little girl who's feeling like I was betrayed by daddy or, you know, he should have loved me differently or he should have known. And those are unfair expectations to have of another person. You have to take responsibility for your experience, for the things you're asking for. And you know, this is where people will argue with me. You can't give it all up to a dominant and then blame them when they don't meet your expectations of perfection. It's just not a reasonable, you know, path to go down. So again, that's part of the conscious part of participating in kink of medicine.
This is so fucking juicy.
I'm glad.
I love this. I think about some of the experiences that I have had. And so I'm just over here thinking about like, there are ways for me to be more conscious in the activities that I'm also participating in and learning how to make more of what I do more conscious.
Absolutely.
And like you said earlier, like it's all learning. Like it's never perfect. We're always learning and growing and practicing.
I would argue it's always perfect, even when it's uncomfortable.
I love it. One thing that I've started doing on the podcast is a kink of the week because again, like we talked about, we don't know unless we know about specific kinks. So I would love to talk about one of your particular kinks. Is there anything that's coming to mind for you right now?
My top kink that I always share when somebody asks me is, it's such a simple one, but it's restraint. Have you done restraint?
I have not.
Oh,
that
yeah.
was the one I was going to ask you about. If you didn't have one on the top of your mind.
Can I swear on here?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So I'm like, because I fucking love restraint. Like everything is better with restraint. Like eating dinner is hotter if like I'm restrained in some way. Like maybe I have handcuffs on and, you know, I'm having to prepare the meal or eat the meal. Like I haven't done this for years, but I can remember the thrill of it. And I, and even now, like if I'm playing with someone intimately in the bedroom and I can feel their body weight on me, that can feel like restraint. And like that takes me back to the dominant and like sort of being forced to do things that I really wanted to do, but was afraid to ask for, you know, so restraint. It fucks with your brain in the best kind of way. I'm also I love rope. I both top and bottom rope. And again, restraint is part of that. And there's something exciting and challenging to the brain and the body. It goes into kind of a panic. And to me, to my body and brain, especially as a child who went through so much trauma and abuse, that thrill, like literally the energetic wave that happens, it feels alive. And so restraint makes me feel alive. And reminds me, it's like I go right back to that moment of I get to receive what's happening while I'm being restrained without guilt or shame. I can fully indulge in the pleasure of this moment because I'm being forced by restraint to take it or to experience it. So that I think that's probably my best explanation of how it lights my mind and body up. To be restrained.
What are some type of restraints? So you mentioned handcuffs, you mentioned another person,
rope.
A rope. What are some other types of restraints that people may want to explore with?
Great question. Oh my God, this could be so creative. There's so many ways to do this because there's emotional and mental restraint too. And like another one, so let's say you have somebody and you've bound them in such a way that they can't speak. So how are you going to know if they're no or if they're a reading or something, for example? Well, you can just do it mentally. You can tell them that they're not allowed to speak And you could maybe make them hold I've seen it done where they've held a plastic spoon in their hand. So their hand is stretched against, let's say, St. Andrew's cross or something, and they're being flogged and they're holding a spoon in their hand and they have a ball gag, so they can't talk. So what happens is if they need a break or if they're a yellow or a red, they can drop the spoon. But the restraint is in the instruction. So it's a mental and emotional restraint of do this, don't do this. And then also, but again, always looking for safety to create safety, which is why I mentioned the spoon. So the spoon is a restraint in its own way, but you also have the power to change the scene by letting it go. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There are mental and emotional restraints on top of like the physical restraints.
Awesome. Well, thank you for sharing about restraints as a form of some type of kink.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up today's podcast episode, I ask all of my guests this question. How do you define pleasure?
Oh my. I think pleasure is not specifically a physical sensation. I believe that pleasure is a conscious and intentional pulling of your camera back so that you are seeing and feeling and experiencing the moment in full sensation. So like it's an intentional noticing of a change in something. You know, I'm getting pleasure from my view of what's happening outside your window. Like there's this strip of orange that goes up along the side of this building that I find really attractive. And the structure of the building being so like perfect and square. And there's something that my eye and my brain really get from looking at that out the window. And I'm receiving pleasure from it, but my pleasure is only being in the noticing of it. Mm. And then even like the curiosity, wow, that orange, that's really pleasant to me. Well, why is that pleasant to me? I'm not even fully sure, but I'm experiencing it as pleasant.
Yeah.
So that's pleasure. The pleasure is awareness, is like conscious awareness.
I love that. Summed up as pleasure is awareness.
Intentional noticing.
Yeah. I love that definition. And how you tied it into like not sex only.
Oh, no.
There's so much pleasure in everything. But so often when we, again, it's one of those terms. When you think of pleasure, you think sex. But that's not true.
For me, pleasure is presence.
Yeah.
That's so juicy. Thank you. You're welcome. Thanks for asking.
Well, where can the listeners find you at?
Yeah. Thank you for asking that too. I have a website, www.sharonmariescott.com. You can sign up for my newsletter there. I've got like a free, like say yes to you challenge if you're interested. You can email me directly at sharon@sharonmariescott.com. You can find me on Facebook. I also have a private Facebook group there called The Woo Underground, which is about the intersection of spirituality and alternative lifestyles. So we talk about kink and polyamory and swinging and queerness and sex positive queerness, but all within the context of a spiritually based foundation and the law of attraction and healing and expansion.
Ooh, yes. I'm in the woo and I've been checking it out, reading the things.
You know, this is brand new. So actually, that's why I didn't even think to say it, but like I've just started my YouTube channel. And I'm about to open a free Mighty Networks group as well.
Ooh,
and
yes.
The whole new push, the new message is called Life Turned On. And it's about everything that we're talking about, pleasure and presence and the ways we can be sovereignly accountable in our own leadership of ourselves and in presence, like sovereign presence. And that those three things, accountability, leadership, and presence, create an active, a newly activated life and that your life feels turned on every day. And so that's the push. And so Life Turned On my TikTok and on my YouTube and on this new Mighty Networks group that I'm about to start.
Amazing. Yes. And we'll have all those links in the show notes for the listeners. And yeah, thank you for chatting with me about how medicine can not look like going to the doctor's office.
There are more ways to heal than there are ways to be hurt. I'm telling you, there are more ways to heal than everyone ever thinks. And again, it's about noticing.
I think that's the title of this episode right there. Healing is more than going to the doctor's office. Juicy, juicy. Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
This podcast is sponsored by Intimacy Coaching by Jordan Donnell. Have you ever desired more from your sex life or feel like you're having good sex but curious about how to make it even better? Are you desiring a deeper intimate connection with yourself? Or maybe you are dealing with desire and arousal concerns or struggling with communicating your desires with your partner. If you're hearing this and thinking, that might be me, and you're curious to learn a bit more, let's chat. I would love to talk with you more to see if working with me is a good fit for you. To learn more about intimacy coaching with Jordan Dinnell, go to coaching.jordandinnell.com. Thank you for listening to this podcast.
Thank you for joining today and continuing to bring awareness to women's health. If you love the show, please subscribe so you never miss another episode and leave a review for others to see. If you want to see me on the daily, you can check out my bio for links to all my pages. Be sure to share this episode with your girlfriends. Thanks again and see you next episode.